Hello and welcome. This is the All About It Symbian Insight podcast number 185. I'm David Gilson, hosting in Hull, and with me in Sussex is...
Rafe Blanford.
And across in Reading, we have...
Steve Litchfield, hello.
And going way, way, way north of the border, we have...
Ewan Spence, up here in Edinburgh.
Excellent. Hello, everyone. So, big news in Nokia this week was that a little while ago, Rich Green, the previous Promega chief technology officer, had stepped down. Some people were saying it was for political reasons, some people saying it was for health reasons, more inclined to believe the latter. He has finally had a permanent replacement, Henry Tirrey, and Rafe has the story.
Yes, Henry Tirrey has taken over as Nokia CTO. He was actually in the sort of acting position after Tim Green stepped down, as you say, David. There's some speculation about why Tim Green went in the first place, but I think it's probably fair to say that there's been a lot of strategic changes, and that's obviously affected the software and the hardware strategy of Nokia. So perhaps the position isn't quite what he imagined when he first joined, or you know, he's moved on. And I mean, if you look into his history, he used to be with Sun before the agreement with Microsoft, and he disappeared then. So some people might say there's prior history here. But nonetheless, looking at Henry Tirrey as the new CTO, now he was previously the head of the Nokia Research Centre, which is where a lot of Nokia research and development goes on. It's where they do cool things in the labs, everything from nanotechnology to material science to cognitive radios, looking at new UIs, all sorts of things. So obviously it's a very important part of the company. It's where, if you like, a lot of the future innovation is developed. But the CTO is also more generally responsible for overseeing engineers in general. Sort of, it can be quite a broad remit, and it does vary from company to company. And we'll have to wait and see exactly, you know, what role Henry Tirrey will be playing. But, you know, there are, as I say, a lot of engineers still at Nokia. So, you know, that's both on the software side, you know, although with the switch to Windows Phone, there's still some stuff around Series 40, Linux internals, a lot of WebKit stuff still going on. And, of course, you know, there's building application services on top of whatever platform, and that will still be taking place. And a lot of the research and development is about exploring the cutting-edge ideas through temporary applications or trials and that kind of thing. And then there's the hardware side, some of which I mentioned there. You know, for example, up in Cambridge, it's a lot of nanotechnology work goes on. But Henry Tirrey himself is a pretty interesting chap. He's got a strong academic background. He's a visiting professor at various universities. He's got 175 academic papers to his name. So I think he is a return, really, to the more research and development, academic innovation, emphasis on the leader of the chief technology officer here. I've actually met him on a number of occasions. One of the most memorable was at Mobile World Congress in 2009, where I sat down for him with a face-to-face interview. And I mean, it was mainly talking about the role of the Nokia Research Centres and the idea that open innovation, that's the idea that research and development should be done in the open as much as possible in order to get the most benefits from it. But towards the end of that interview, he did sort of start talking on some more unusual topics. And I was rather gobsmacked to have a discussion about how the idea of the Star Trek transporter perhaps wasn't as far-fetched as people might think, and that we could see equivalent technology at some point in the future. And he was talking about a timeline of 50 years, but he was very much talking about how quantum computing and how the developments that are yet to come will radically reshape how we think of IT and computing, and that, you know, in one sense, we've only taken the small steps. So he certainly, I think it's fair to say, he has something slightly of the mad scientist about him, but he's an extremely personal guy. He's got a very enthusiastic and energetic personality, but he's a razor-sharp mind, and is certainly one of the most interesting and entertaining Nokia execs I've had the opportunity to interview. So I'm looking forward to what he can do with the CTO position. And I think it's a particularly interesting one to look at. And the reason I've spent a bit of time talking about it is because we talk a lot about how important innovation is and the idea of getting new ideas into the handsets. And Nokia spends a lot of money on research and development. These NRC labs, their idea is to explore technology frontiers, look at scientific challenges so that Nokia can deliver, as they put it, irresistible personal experiences tomorrow. So it's clearly going to be a source for innovation. Stephen Elop has said that he wants to get some of the ideas out of Nokia's labs and into products more quickly and more effectively. And he says, you know, some of the things he's seen in the Nokia labs, and I can certainly confirm this having looked in a couple of them myself, are jaw-dropping, and they want to get them into products. And I think Henry Thierry will be very well positioned to do this kind of thing. So I look forward to seeing what happens, and hopefully I'll get to catch up with him at some point and I'll report back in due course.
I think one of the most interesting things for me about this is this is a point where Nokia have actually done a big change. This is an executive level change. Let's be clear about that. That is not something you just do because you feel like it. It's something that needs to be approved, you know, implicitly by the board. It's a decision that Steve and Neil Upman made, and obviously Rich Green has done a huge amount of work for Nokia. But, you know, there is a time when the incumbency can lead to certain staleness, a sort of, yeah, I've seen this idea, and it needs somebody else to come in and go, oh, look, you've taken all the keys off the phone and made a touch screen. We should put that on a phone. You know, obviously, you know, Henry's be familiar with this stuff, but then having to step back and look at this completely over the entire portfolio of devices. And, you know, this comes at the same time as Windows Phone is coming on the horizon for Nokia, and he's going to be based out in Silicon Valley as well. So, you know, this is actually quite a radical step change for Nokia. This could lead to great big things. This isn't just like changing somebody up from Series 40 up to Series 60. You know, this is whatever is going to happen 5 years down the line, 6, 7, 8, 9 years down the line. I mean, if we look back at Microsoft, when they brought in that strange UI on Zoom, you know, that became Metro, that became the basis of Windows Phone, that became the basis of what's going forward with Windows 8 and the whole tiling system. So that change of how they looked at something in a little testbed platform is now driving the entire company. This is a sort of benefit that a CTO can bring that has a big long-range vision and has also got a really good hand on the operating mechanics, and that's what I suspect we're going to see from Henry over the next couple of years. But at the same time, I think it's going to be quite an invisible role to the public.
Yes, I mean, that's always, I think, the case with the CTO. I would say that I think the Rich Green incident, I mean, I think we should be fair to Nokia here and say it obviously hasn't worked. You know, he was in the role effectively less than 18 months or so, and that's a pretty short time, especially for a position like CTO. He only joined the leadership team in February of this year. But again, we do have to say, you know, there isn't anything actual public on this. You know, as David mentioned at the very beginning, it's partly there's been some talk about health grounds, and he's going off back to the States to pursue new opportunities. So really there's no formal information here, but it did seem there was a suggestion that there, political infighting. Rich Green was a very vocal proponent of the Qt and the Migo strategy, but as you rightly says there, we've now got a Henry Thierry in place, and look forward to what comes out of that.
Yeah, and I think given Henry Thierry's academic interests, I think if you get a chance, Rafe, you have to introduce me to him. I think I'd love to talk about quantum computation and teleportation to him.
Yes, well, one of his specialities is actually talking about karma and sort of connections in social networks. So a very broad range of interests. The papers he's written cover statistics, social science, and of course computing science as well. And I will confess, I had a read of some of them, and a lot of it went straight over my head. But it's talking about the dynamics of connections and networks within social networks and that kind of thing, and how that will generate emotions and that sort of thing, which clearly is important in the future as these devices become, in one sense, more connected and more personal and share more and more information back and forth. But that's the kind of thing that the research labs look at. It's not just the, you know, if you like, the applied research where you can then see it going to one very specific bit of hardware or software. It can be trying to understand how things work and break them down in a scientific way, because you can then use those sort of conclusions to generate your next generation of service, or think about how phones should behave, how people interact with them, and so on. So, you know, it's a very broad area, but if you ever get a chance to read the Nokia Research Center's papers, I can certainly recommend doing so. If you've got a scientific background, you won't have a problem with most of the language, but sometimes they are written in academic speak, which isn't always the easiest thing to interpret. So in the future we will try and pick out some of the more interesting ones and talk about some of the themes in them, but nonetheless you can go to, I think it's nrc.nokia.com, to find out more information.
I think that's a project for me in the future. Okay, so the next story on the news docket is Swipe over on Nokia Beta Labs. If you haven't heard of Swipe, it's an alternate keyboard. It was actually the first application to give a 65th edition a well-implemented portrait QWERTY keyboard. And the idea is, rather than tapping to type, you actually draw a line or a curve between each subsequent letter of the word, and it tries to puzzle out what you were trying to say, and it will give you up to 8 alternate suggestions as well. It's been available for a while. It's been available in the Obby Store even, although version 2.0, which is based on user feedback from Symbian and Android users, has now been released exclusively in the Nokia Beta Labs. And normally I will avoid Nokia Beta Labs like the plague, given the effects that it had on one of my Symbian free phones, but I took the chance for everyone, and I installed Swipe on my Swipe 2.0 on my N8, and to be honest, I haven't stopped using it since. It's they've had hundreds and hundreds of bug fixes, but the main update is that they are now supporting split screen keyboards for Symbian Anna devices. And I tried Swipe a while ago and thought, it's not for me. Although I've been trying it on a capacitive screen. It's I found it actually a lot better than the portrait QWERTY keyboard in Symbian Anna, which I found very cramped and I'm sorry to say, error prone. Has anyone else on the team tried it?
You know, I'm growing to love Swipe. I have to say, we wrote about this last week at the tail end of Friday. It's the fact that it's one of the few cross-platform systems means that you can switch between devices and still have the same input system, and I find that really exciting. And in terms of use, you know, it's almost like it's far easier to memorize a shape that you trace out with your fingers to try and work out where to press a button on the screen. When you go for the on-screen QWERTY keyboards, you do have to look at the screen all the time to make sure that you're going where you're typing, especially on the slightly smaller screens of things like the N8 and the C6. Move to Swipe, though, and it's like the old Palm Pilot's graffiti system. You know what shape a word is. Of course, Palm used letters. This is using entire words. So, you know, I know what the shape of that is, and it's far easier for me to draw that, you know, and Swipe isn't as requires as much accuracy because it does all the background mathematics and plotting and trying to guess what you're doing in algorithms. So in actual fact, Swipe, I find, is a little bit faster, but it allows me to stop looking at the keyboard and look higher up the screen. Now, of course, you've got a split-screen keyboard, and that benefit is even more. Swipe have said that they'd love to be on every single mobile phone platform out there, and that's one of their company goals, to be available to everybody if they want it. And good for them.
And I disagree. Swipe is the spawn of the devil itself. Swipe is an appalling solution. It will involve everyone getting RSI in their thumbs. It's complete nonsense when you try and spell out a word like indiscretionary. You try doing that on Swipe, you'd be there for 10 minutes tracing a little cartoon character with your thumb. It's a complete nightmare of a solution, and I would say avoid it wherever possible.
Steve, for the record, in the last 3 months, how many articles have required no corrections from you from me?
None.
One.
All right, one.
Do you know, and that was the one written completely with Swipe.
I would tend that the amount, number of corrections and articles from you is no relation whatsoever to what you used to write it, but how much time you took to write it.
That's one article using Swipe has no mistakes. I'm sorry, you're saying that the spawn of the devil is the only thing that prevents me getting you on with the job. I think something's up there.
I think I should probably take a middle line on Swipe.
Yes, go on, Riff.
I've used it, and I think it's technically a very elegant solution in that you sort of use it the first time, you sort of go, ooh, isn't that clever? You know, it really works. But at the end, it comes down to whether you can get on with it or not. And I have to confess, I've tended to go back towards the sort of standard keyboards. I think that's partly because I'm switching devices, and especially recently I've been using the E6 and how nice it is to have a physical keyboard. And then when I go back to something else, it's sort of, I'll just use the standard one. And particularly with the introduction of the, you know, portrait QWERTY and Symbian Anna, I use Swipe even less than I had done before. That said, I think it's nice to have the option, and certainly some people, you know, live with it and you can get faster speeds on it. I would say if you're using it on a regular basis, probably it's possible to be faster on Swipe than it is with a traditional keyboard. But that will obviously depend on, you know, how experienced you are with it, how much practice you've had, and just your, you know, your personal use case. I'd certainly be in favour of maintaining it and actually having it as an option. I'd go so far as to say it would probably be something I would choose to have pre-installed, but I suspect that rather depends on licensing and things like that as far as Nokia is concerned. I will also say it tends to work better on a wider screen, just like the Portrait QWERTYs itself, and so it tends to work better on the bigger devices. It's a bit more forgiving if you're not quite as accurate in your swiping as before, although I think the big benefit over swipe compared to, you know, a standard keyboard is that you don't exactly have to be completely accurate when running over the keys with this line drawing, as David described earlier, and that's because obviously it can look at the totality of the word and guess at it, and it seems to be more accurate when doing that than some of the sort of, if you like, the keyboard only solutions. And I suspect that's because it's sort of able to look into a database. I know from talking to Swipe themselves that they actually have a pretty impressive tuning technology that goes beyond just looking at all the letters in a word and saying, well, what might that be, which is obviously how the traditional systems work. They look at, you know, near misses and mistakes like that because they know about the position of keys on the keyboard. So overall, I'm glad to see it continuing to get an update. And if you haven't tried it out, I would suggest you do so simply because it's available for free and it may well improve your input experience.
Yeah, I think it really will as well, because I'm sad to say that my worst fears came true when I got Symbian Anna on the N8, because that Portrait QWERTY keyboard is just too narrow on a 3.5-inch 16:9 ratio screen. So I need some help to type in Portrait, and at the moment Swipe is doing it for me. I wish SwiftKey was available on Symbian as well, but that's my personal favourite, which is, I mean, it's only on Android at the moment, where it actually predicts entire words for you, so it does actually save you a lot of physical work. But I think Swipe is the best alternative at the minute. Love it or hate it, I think just particularly Steve hates it. But I think, yeah, the Anna keyboard is just too small, I'm afraid. So anyway, we will move on from that one now. So Ewan, you have a story here. There's a social media gift thingamidoodle going on in Glasgow where people are they actually getting physical gifts for engaging in social media, or what's going on?
So this is part of Social Media Week, or at least was part of Social Media Week, which was running last week throughout the world. Nokia was one of the global partners. And James Whatley, a name which will be familiar to very dedicated readers of All About Symbian and the rest of the group, put together a little bit of something different. And it's always sort of worrying when you hear the marketing agencies have come up with something different, and the fear that it's, you know, that they're not going to get it, that they're going to do something a bit silly. But this is actually both practical, it's educational as well, and it's also fun and has got Nokia a lot of good press. Essentially, it's a great big vending machine with a hashtag on the side and a Foursquare location dedicated to the machine. Whenever anybody checks in using Foursquare to the location, to the machine, and uses it, the hashtag that's printed on the side of the machine will give them a gift. Now, the majority of the time, it's a bar of chocolate. There's been no word actually on who the chocolate supplier is, but occasionally it's providing something a little bit extra. One of the first early gifts that were coming out there was a brand new Nokia N8, and I'm sure at some point we will see a list of everything that's been handed out here. But this is just smart thinking. As I said, it has that educational aspect. It's sort of like Sesame Street. It's doing the Nokia can do social check-in. Nokia can be out there and do great wacky ideas. Nokia's not this old fuddy-duddy company. It's doing that sort of all under the ground. And what happening is, I could check into a vending machine. But it's actually doing a lot more than that. So this has been a really, really good idea from James and the team down there at 1,000 Heads. And it's nice to see Nokia doing a little bit of engagement as well on these wider scope of things. It's not to say that it's ever going to replace buying a back page advert in the FT or doing all your banner adverts and all your promotions and everything online, but it's another good string to the bow.
Although, just remember, kids, unless it's James Whatley, don't accept sweets from strangers.
Well, that's because James isn't a stranger to anybody.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, as ever, we've been hard at work reviewing, and Steve has been reviewing Joyku Spot Premium, which, if you didn't know, turns your Symbian device into a Wi-Fi hotspot. I've tried it a while ago, but Steve's been having a look at the latest version. So what did you think?
Yes. Joico Spot Premium has been something we've been kind of shying away from on the site over the last couple of years. We've mentioned it many times, but the fact that it's £8 to actually buy, I guess, has meant that each of us has just shied away from just buying it for our own use, just to test it and review it. But we got in touch with the suppliers and got a full copy of the premium version over, only to find out, in actual fact, there are several ways to get it for free. It's worth mentioning, yes, it is a complete, lets you tether any device via your Symbian phone, which turns into a Wi-Fi hotspot. The free version just gives you HTTP, I think it's for access for using web browsing. The premium version gives you all the different sorts of web access, including email, FTP, and so forth, and also third-party client stuff. So you can use third-party clients like Twitter clients and so forth on different tablets and laptop computers to access the internet. So you can get it for free via the Nokia Obi Store gift system. If you go into the Obi Store and you haven't previously been offered a gift, have a look down there, because quite a few devices are showing the Joico Spot Premium as one of the gifts that Nokia have licensed from Joico Spot to give away. Also, it's bundled on a number of devices. If you go into SW Update, things like the E52 and E55, amongst the two that spring to mind, actually have a Joico Spot Premium licensed again by Nokia for your use for free. It's also, you can get it at cut price if you go over Opera Mini, I noticed. So you boot up that browser and it will go into the Opera Mini store, which doesn't sound like a likely place, but if you go in there, you'll find Joico Spot Premium for £4, which is half the price on the web. And other people have also pointed out that it's actually cheaper in different stores around the world. I guess it's priced according to how rich or poor the country is. So do shop around. It works very, very well. It's a very slick interface, almost nothing to go wrong, but there are a couple of caveats. One is that there's no WPA encryption, and that's the standard encryption on most routers these days. You only get WEP encryption, WEP, which apparently is quite crackable now. If you're a hacker, you can hack into a WEP network in about 2 minutes flat. Having said that, you're at a mobile hotspot, you're creating your own hotspot at a cafe or just out in the park somewhere. The chances of a hacker actually saying, "Oh, I wonder if I can hack into that guy's ad hoc network," fairly small, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. But it is a limitation of Symbian, apparently, in the current version, that Joico can't implement WPA2. There's also no, and this is where I need some input from Rafe, there's no support for infrastructure mode. Now, it just supports ad hoc mode. Now, Rafe, what's the difference in ad hoc and infrastructure at a technical level? Why is it so different?
I'll step in and take that one, Rafe. The difference between ad hoc and infrastructure is basically ad hoc is a, I think as we all probably know, is a peer-to-peer system. There's no centralized traffic routing on the network, whereas infrastructure, there is a central point on the network where all traffic goes to, and that central point, which is usually your home router, acts as like a network switch, whereas in ad hoc, packets are sent out everywhere and it's up to individual machines to say, "Oh well, this isn't meant for me, I'll ignore it." Steve, there's one question I had for you, which is something you haven't mentioned, because with the way that Joico Spot works, you've got both radios running. You've got the 3G radio and the Wi-Fi radio. Yeah. How badly does this affect battery life?
Fairly badly, as you might expect. Now, they have claimed they've optimized it, and I suspect after 3 or 4 years of development, and it's a pretty mature software product now, they've optimized it as best they can. But yes, the simple physics of radiating out an FM, a Wi-Fi signal, and also maintaining a potentially very battery-draining 3.5G data signal to a cell mast a few miles away, that really is going to make your device warm up. The battery will get hot and the battery will get drained. I would suggest you keep a ProPorter charger or a mains charger plugged in while you're doing this for a length of time. I should also note that if you've got a laptop computer and you've got a Symbian phone, then it's probably best to avoid Joico Spot Premium altogether and simply tether via Bluetooth or USB. Not many people realize this is possible, but obviously it actually includes everything you need to tether with almost minimal setup, direct without using Wi-Fi at all, and it's a lot more power efficient. But so Joico Spot Premium is very useful when you've got, for example, an iPad or something which doesn't easily communicate with a Symbian smartphone on a one-to-one level. Wi-Fi is a nice lowest common denominator connection system. That means many devices can get on through the one phone without any real connection interoperability hassles.
Yeah, and I would endorse the USB cable connection method too, because you've got the Ovi suite for Windows users, which will allow you to get online. And if you're a Linux user like me, if you put the phone into PC suite mode and connect it to Ubuntu, Ubuntu will just see your phone as a 3G dongle. So that works very nicely, and I've done it a few times.
And exactly the same on the Mac. It works very, very nicely as a Bluetooth modem to access the internet. I've done that many times from a MacBook. Rafe?
Yeah, just to talk about some of the practical experience of using Joyco Spot as a hotspot. Yes, it will do a couple of hours, but I would definitely regard it as a solution to sort of use at a convenient moment, you know, when you haven't got the cables with you and haven't got it set up and everything else. I think a lot of people who do that kind of thing on a very regular basis, they'll often have a MiFi or a dedicated dongle. And if you're doing substantial amounts of that, that is going to be better simply because of the battery life concerns. Nonetheless, I have used this on a couple of occasions down on a beach, up on the cliff tops, in cars, things like that. And it's a very effective solution. But it will destroy the battery life. So I would say if you're doing relatively light browsing, you can probably expect to get maybe 3 or even 4 hours out of it. More than that, and you're probably pushing it. In terms of the way they've optimized it, that tends to be things like, you know, switching the power down when not in use. So if you're doing something really heavy going, like, I don't know, downloading a big file, streaming music or video, which is perfectly possible because it's, you know, a relatively fast 3G connection, that will eat the battery even more quickly. And yes, it does heat things up very quickly. I think particularly I've noticed it with the metallic devices. Maybe they're just better at conducting the heat out and you notice it more. But I do wonder whether something that's almost becoming, I wouldn't say too hot to touch, but certainly very noticeable, if that's actually doing any damage to the battery itself. Nonetheless, incredibly impressive solution. And since Joyco Spot first came out, we've seen this become much more common on the other platforms and even being built in, which is why we've seen Nokia license it, as Steve was mentioning there, in so many ways. And obviously there is also a cut-down version of this. You don't have to use the professional version. There's a sort of cheaper standard version, if you like, and that's also included in a lot of the more recent phones, including many of the Symbian 3 devices.
It's also worth pointing out that if you think it's not just for things like with an iPad or everything. One of the great uses for Joyco Spot is if you're sitting with something like the PlayStation Portable or the Nintendo DS and 3DSs, these don't have 3G or telephony circuits built in, but what they do have is Wi-Fi. So you can be out on the beach, and if you want to get online with your gaming devices, then Joyco Spot is actually a very good way of doing these things as well. And the battery power will last longer than your gaming device, so you don't have an issue there either.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done the same thing with a Kindle, so it's ideal for that kind of relatively low usage scenario. Or, you know, if you want to leave email in on the background of a computer or something like that, certainly then you'll get quite acceptable battery life.
Yeah, and I'm one for always liking to combine applications in a way that was not intended. So here's a little trick you can do with Joyco Spot if you're a hardcore geek and you really have to get some files sent around. If you also have SimFTP, which is an FTP server application, that works very well with Joyco Spot and actually turns your phone into a wireless network attached storage box. So...
You're sounding very geeky.
Yeah. Everybody out there, which of the four of us runs Linux?
Yes, but when the internet's locked down, I'll still be able to freely transfer files.
And when everything goes wrong, we ask David for help. So,
yeah. Yay. Okay, so that's all. I think that covers all the news. So one or two discussion points, depending how the clock treats us. We've got Nokia World coming up in about a month. It's the 26th to 27th of October. And it's going to be at the same place it was last year, which is the Excel Centre in London, which means that once you make the trip to London, you then have to get out to the Docklands as well. And we are all going to be there. We're all going to be there for varying lengths of time, but we will all be there. So, Riff, what do you know about Nokia World so far? What can we expect to see?
Well, I think Nokia World this year is probably going to be one of Nokia's biggest ever events, and there's probably no real surprise to say that there's a lot of anticipation about what they're going to announce. But I did notice this week that they've updated their Nokia World website, which perhaps offers, I think it's fair to say, a few clues. So we've got, as you might expect, the keynote from Nokia CEO Stephen Elop. But looking at in day one in the afternoon session, there's a guest speaker slot from Joe Belfiore, who is the corporate vice president of the Windows Phone program at Microsoft. So I would suggest it's looking increasingly likely that Nokia's first Windows Phone device is going to be announced there. A little while back on the site, I talked about some of the other things I expected to see. And while I think there'll be a lot of noise around Windows Phone, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the odd Symbian device being announced. There's some room for maybe a bit more timing information on Bell as well, I think, for the existing devices. But given that Nokia have said before there's, you know, I think it was 10 devices to come, we've had a couple of those, and given we've probably got about 9 months left, it stands to reason that we'll probably see another one at Nokia World. The other thing we'll probably be hearing more about is the next generation of Series 40 and the plans around Qt and Series 40, which have flown rather on the radar so far, but I think could have as bigger implications for Nokia's long-term strategy as Windows Phone. Admittedly, it's probably not quite as exciting to geeks, but in terms of the number of devices affected, it will be even bigger. We're talking the sort of hundreds of millions of devices, of course, in the Series 40 realm of things. Looking at some of the other things going on, we've got Joe Harlow, for example, that's the executive vice president in charge of smart devices, is talking about challenging conventional smartphone wisdom. And then we've got a stream about the next billion, that's particularly Series 40, with some various interesting speakers from things like CNN International, as well as various software companies. And then there's a whole stream on location, which is sort of really emphasis on the unit that combines Nokia as Navtech and the sort of social location of services, Nokia Maps, that kind of thing. So we'll have various speakers on that. That's all going on day one, and I should say that location stuff, we'll be hearing a big speech from, I think, Michael Halbwell, which should be very interesting to listen to, because that will be talking about the strategy going forward. On the second day, it's really more of the same. Nicholas Savander is going to be doing sort of the welcome and opening of the operator stream, and then we'll have Jerry Devard, who's the CMO, talking about how Nokia is going to market that. And I think the connection there with operators is important, particularly when you compare it to the relationship that Apple has with operators, and to an extent Google as well. Nokia have made great plans, so they'll be the most operator friendly of the bunch, so we might actually hear a bit more about that. And the marketing stuff is always interesting, because I think Nokia's big challenge now is how does it sell its new devices, and that applies right across the range from Symbian Windows Phone into Series 40, as there's certainly in the last few years some damage has been done to its brand, more so in some markets than others, we should be careful to say there. And there's also, of course, at Nokia World, a big developer experience always going on, and there'll be various dedicated stands for them, as well as a whole stream on the second day. For example, it's Marco Argenti, who's really in charge of developer experience and marketplace. That's AppSource to you and me, as well as Brandon Watson, who's one of the stars of Microsoft, talking about Windows Phone 7 development. And there's also going to be various panel sessions for the usual analysts on board, as well as interactive panels with app shootouts and monetization of applications, all those kind of things. And I've in the past attended many of these developer things at Nokia World and other Nokia events, and often you get some of the most insight from where things are going next from these, because you know, you have developers sitting in the audience who I don't wish to label all as a cynical bunch, but they do tend to be that way, and listening to their comments as things get announced actually I think is one of the ways to get the best informed analysis. You do have to maybe cancel out the outliers. I have a distinct memory of sitting in the back of one particular Nokia event and one developer telling me it was all rubbish and the world was going to end next week anyway, so I might as well give up. But most developers are a lot more optimistic than that. And if you are a developer and you're in a bit Nokia World and you want to have a chat, tell us what you think, please get in touch and one of us will meet up with you. And that really goes for anyone. We're going to be present at Nokia World, hopefully in a relatively big way. It's going to be the biggest and busiest event of the year for us. We've got lots of interesting things, including some big announcements of our own coming up just before Nokia World, I hope. But please get in touch. You can do that through Rafe at All About Symbian, or indeed any of the other email addresses, Twitter handles, Facebook, etc., etc., or the contact form on the site. And if you're someone who's wanting to know what's happening at Nokia World, and you've got some particular suggestions about what we should be doing to cover it or what you'd like to see, some emphasis, do also get in touch and we'll be happy to hear from you.
Yeah. Now, what I'm really looking forward to doing is it's what I actually got the most out of last year at Nokia World was rather than sitting through like presentations and keynotes and panels, was actually walking around the technology demos and actually seeing what really is a few years down the line. I know pretty much all of the technology I saw last year still hasn't hit the market as neither you would expect it to. So I'm going to ask Stephen Ewan, what are you each looking forward to and are going to hunt out at Nokia World? So Steve first.
Three things. First of all, of course, I'm looking forward to playing with the Symbian Bell handsets, which many people have tried in other parts of the world at various events. I've yet to have hands-on, so I'm very much looking forward to that. Number two, I'm very much looking forward to having my socks well and truly blown off by seeing Windows Phone Mango, which I've been extremely impressed by in terms of software demos, actually running on Nokia hardware. I really do think that will be a killer combination, and I can absolutely see the future in Windows Phone going forward into 2012, 2013, 2014, etc., despite my love for Symbian as well. Number three, I'm just looking forward to seeing the buzz, feeling the atmosphere, feeling the mood in the hall. Well, this is a year of incredible change for Nokia. They're having to do a complete transformation in many different ways. And it'll be just interesting to see whether the buzz is positive, negative, not sure, just to try and catch the vibe of the event, the vibe of the moment. Finally, I'm going to walk around with an Android phone, showing its home screen, playing with the widgets, and see who knows says, "Oh, is that the latest Symbian Bell version or something?" Because I still reckon that there's just so many similarities, and I know these things, the interfaces are converging, but I think I can hoodwink a few people.
That sounds almost like when I went to one of the Nokia events and spent the whole time walking around with a Palm backpack on, with the nice emblazoned logo of the now incredibly popular and well-respected and high-selling operating system. Three things. First of all, I'm actually looking forward to Stephen Ewart's presentation. It's going to be interesting to have a non-Finn do the most of the talking at Nokia World. So to have three tones of voice and then some from the Canadian will be a refreshing change. But also because this is going to be a pretty, high wire balancing act. Given the journalist's take from February the 11th, this is going to be a keynote that is going to have to be word perfect and also idea perfect as well. Nokia's aren't quite all in, but they are at the last chance saloon with a small stack of poker chips in front of them. So that is, that's going to be a keynote for all keynotes. Get it right and it's a home run. Get it wrong and you've just done a tackle and Buster Posey going into fourth base and destroyed the Giants for the rest of the year. On smaller things, I'm going to hunt down the person who decides, are you going to have to sign into a Nokia account on a Windows phone? I've done my last count, within 5 minutes of booting a Windows phone, you have to put in six different accounts and web surveys, and whether you have to do that for another one to use the Nokia services is going to be one of the small points that I'm looking to see how Nokia actually implement Windows Phone as they go through on that one. And probably the final main one is to see just how much time Bell gets, whether it's lip service, whether it's equal with the S40 stuff, whether it's part and parcel and gets a nice, 60-40 time split with the benefit going to Windows Phone. I think that's going to be quite telling as well. So there's a lot of balancing that needs to. I think what everybody else is going to be looking forward to is the Stephen Ewan photo challenge, where Steve and I have exact same photo camera and we take the exact same pictures and people try and tell who took which picture.
Oh, I can give you a clue that the really bad one is from Ewan and it's a particularly special ability. But if I may, David, I'm going to add in three things as well. Mm. I'm actually looking forward to seeing the general reaction at Nokia World. I mean, this is really following on from what Ewan was saying, that it's an important event for Nokia. I don't think it's quite make or break. I think that's actually going to become more next year. But certainly this is probably the most significant milestone of recent times. And is Nokia delivering on its new strategy? It really does need to announce a Windows Phone device. There's no doubt in my mind about that. If they don't manage to do that, it's going to look incredibly embarrassing, having sort of been talking about Q4, even with all the caveats they've been making about it. But I rather suspect Stephen Elop and Joe Harlow wouldn't want to be in a position to have to get up on stage and go, yes, we're going to be doing Windows Phone, but we haven't got a device to announce. So I'm virtually certain that's going to happen now. The other thing I'm sort of looking forward to is just taking the general temperature of all the Nokia people at the event, because it's the company's been through a pretty major shake-up in the last 12 months or so. Looking back to the last Nokia World, the day before it all kicked off, we had OPK announce that he was stepping down. And Stephen Elop will be taking over. And also we had, obviously, Antti van Jokke announce he was going after he hadn't been made CEO. So there was a feeling of certain unreality about Nokia World. And it was almost like, well, we just have to get through this event and then what happens next. So in more recent times, when I've been having various Nokia briefings and there's a couple of events, there's been a lot more passion and a lot more determination, and the kind of idea that it's a new Nokia or Nokia refresh has sometimes been hashtagged on Twitter. I want to see how much that's borne out at the event itself, because I think that kind of attitude that is communicated both by the keynotes and the sessions that go on and just the demo people on the ground and Nokia will to a large extent dictate how people come away from the event, and that's both media but also, of course, all the delegates. And let's not forget, you know, we tend to focus on some of the media side of things, but there are a lot of developers there, people from operators, and they will all be going away, taking away their impression of Nokia. So this is Nokia's chance to kind of deliver and say, yes, we're back, we can deliver, you need to be with us because we're going to continue to set the agenda. From all the signs I've seen so far, I think Nokia are doing the right thing in terms of some of the strategy, but there has been questions in the past about execution. So if they can launch a new Windows Phone device, or even devices possibly, as well as make some more promises on deliverance of Bell and of course the Series 40, then that will go a long way towards convincing people that Nokia is indeed, you know, back on track. So it should be a fascinating event, and we're going to be doing our very best to bring you as much coverage as possible.
And Riff, I know something that you and I should do as well while we're there is try and hunt out N9 to take some photos of and play with.
That's right. Well, actually, in terms of devices, I'm hoping that Steve will get a chance to play with Bell before Nokia World. We should be getting some review devices in very shortly. And the same will actually apply to the N9. We'll make sure there's a bit of coverage of that on All About Migo, but we'll mention it on All About Symbian because I know a lot of people are interested in it. But yes, it will be an opportunity, of course, to play with all the devices, and there's lots of new accessories. And I have no doubt that all of those will be fully on display in the expo area, and we know that a lot of you are interested in those. So, look forward to some forthcoming reviews before Nokia World, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And then at Nokia World itself, we will, of course, cover any new announcements in terms of devices, but also some of the ones that have happened recently, and give our hands-on impressions and talk about what we think of them.
Yeah, and we will come back to talk about Nokia World in a few weeks, because we will do our regular talk about what equipment we're all bringing and how we're going to use it. Just a real hardcore geeky conversation, and possibly a little bit of a planning session as well. But we're right out of time, so we're going to say goodbye to everyone. So at Ewan on Twitter, please say goodbye.
Okay, I'll say goodbye. I'll put you one final thing about Nokia World, and I wonder if we're going to have an Oprah moment where she stands up and tells everybody in the audience that there's a phone under their seat.
Ooh, that would be good. It'd be nice to come home with a souvenir. So, at Steve Litchfield, please say goodbye to everyone.
Yes, goodbye to everyone.
Yeah, and at Rafe Blanford.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
And I was at David Gilson. So, we'll see you next week, everyone. Bye.